Monday. We are finally able to take a train for Paris and arrive in the evening. She is very excited to see her grandparents and I my parents. We decide to enjoy the walk as well as being wary of taking the coffee metro. People wear shorts, all of them. The orange sun reflects on the cobblestones of this area, which I recall a little rough, but our happiness feels indestructible. A fruit crate crashes in front of us, and another. The market is closing on the higher street, and stall owners are throwing away today's unsold items. They see us, but aren't clearly going to change their habits for the random pedestrians. It is fast in darkness, and I see a man 20 metres away, throwing what I'm guessing is a bunch of some vegetables. I evaluate the weight and run towards it, catching it satisfyingly. I turn around to see her smiling, and we both look at the man, who claps before quickly returning to his work. In a minute, the place is bombarded, and we make a run for it. What I caught is a bunch of ripe figs, needing to be eaten now or never. They are excellent, and I propose some to her. She politely tries, but from her expression, isn't convinced yet. We pass a lonely stall where they sell yellow melons with the most turquoise flesh I've ever seen. She says she knows it and I'm about to buy one, but she adds they contain alcohol. I notice that amazingly the plant also grows equally turquoise olives. We're almost at the park and it's now daytime again. Some people have already spread picnic blankets. In the corner of my eye I see Beatrice on her motorbike. I'm sure she's surprised to see us in Paris. I somehow ignore her, being busy eating some figs and spotting a bin across the street. A couple walks towards it and I throw my fig skins in to make her laugh. The throw is long and unlikely to land, but incredibly touches the edge, frees in perfect equilibrium of suspense before tipping into the bin. She and I explode and dance a bit, still moving towards the park. I forget Bea, but somehow hope she witnessed the event. Tuesday. She's fairly attractive. I think it was May. Not this week, but after. Look there, I thought it up. You can put her down now. Come on, little legs, not you. 1 minute they are saying. It should have been out of my reach. You made it do it 8 times. The conversation escalated. I detach myself the things that do not serve me. That was my imaginary friend. Blue cheese and broccoli. Come on, Joey. Safer, she replied. That was good. I'm the criminal. Just play the game. And you can't have 2 conversations at once. What's up, 5? A tad of resentment? We should get cake in another house. That's £170 you will never regret. Wednesday. I'm standing upright in the street corner like every Wednesday for the past 6 months. My heart pounding, I wait. That's it, it's time. I'm the first. I've become punctual. The others will come later and catch up. I'm starting. I take up my equipment and sit in the pavement. Today I have a small penknife, some super glue, a very beautiful piece of wood whose name of the tree I ignore, a Twix. This chocolate bar used to be called Raider. I ate my first one when I was 12 years old with Olivier, who lived in a big fancy house. Olivia's parents had a cellar full of canned goods in an American freezer. Just in case, Olivia had told me mysteriously. It was a supermarket but at home. Olivia had picked up a Raider without paying and asked me if I wanted one. I'd seen them in the grocery store before, but just the packaging, which is why I was amazed that there were 2 candy bars inside. This was the best thing I'd eaten since I was born, by far. In the other pocket I find a rubber band, a small light bulb and 3 napkins from the bakery from when I bought a butter ham sandwich in Paris the year before. This is how I understood it was autumn again, when I usually need this specific coat. Once the tools are out, I look around. There are pebbles, dried poop, an empty whiskey bottle the size of a tiny reproduction of a Jack Daniels, whose customers I wonder about. Farther on, I see the guy from the laundry who walks and whose legs I discover for the first time. A lady on a bicycle looks at me and smiles. I smile back and scrutinise her face, marked but with very young eyes. A child is on the seat behind her, and when she sees me, yells, pointing her finger at me, "Mom, he looks like a Chinaman." I line up the pebbles by their colour and size until I'm close to the poop that is so dry and light the breeze moves it around. After 2 hours, during which the pavement is now reorganised as a chessboard, my alarm goes off and I pack my things. No one else came. I hope there will be more next week. Thursday. In a community of new friends, the proposition to add a mountain is enthusiastically agreed amongst the prominent decision makers, young and old. This would create an occupation and associated rituals for hundreds of locals and visitors alike. My satisfaction. My haste. They call for patience. The local council will meet to discuss it, but for now, all must rest. A session is announced, but as I read the present faces, I can only witness a growing dissonance. They were a bad omen to something I just saw as a formality. My uncle notices many gumboots at the entrance of the discussion hall and says, "Is this a mosque?" in a tone that calls for laughter but provokes none. I'm shocked. I never knew my uncle, always funny, was prejudiced. Then arguments started to come in and I slowly joined ranks with the opposing faction. The reasons, if rather boring, made sense. In a reversal of expectations, we all shovel a grave for the unborn mountain. Friday. Of the latest visit, let me be the messenger. Canny bought more land, even. His very presence at every single guided tour is testament to commitment. A room in a warehouse in the desert. They built a model of the first scales of humanity. Columns of elephant representation on top of eroded towers, defying gravity, marching in eternal immobility. I pick up the leaflet. McDonald's are a controversial choice of sponsor, but they, in turn, obviously bent. Canny redesigned their logo for the occasion. They let him. The golden arches are bitten. Crumbs of gold on a deep red of spilled wine. They let him do it. I pick up another two of the leaflets in awe. In my mind, the smiles of two friends who care for such artefact. On the model of the cliff, an engraving of his actual visa card, actual size, actual colours. When built, the numbers will be titanic long. A comment behind me goes viral. I feel the metallic taste of addiction. Saturday. Walking up the stairs, our gaze crosses as long as two myopic strangers would guess at length the facial expression of the other, certainly inducing innuendos or at least ever so slightly enjoyable discomfort. Too long. Plus, we haven't unlearnt to not be at ease by one's own lack of breaking the silence. Should I say something? Do I want to? The mutual flirt is oozing out, and to avoid embarrassment, the other people stay away from the waves they won't ride. She goes in the lift, turning her head slightly, which I interpret as overtly checking I am following. We talk. We laugh before the sentences end, even to the clumsy analogy of the lift as a food processor. A revolving door is installed inside and I lose sight of her. And when I see her again, she is with a very attractive woman who seems to be her girlfriend. I fall silent and reassess reality. A little humming comes out of my ears. Sunday. Why am I following him? Is he guilty? If so, surely I must call the force, not my weak one, the authorities. If not, must I doubt my sanity of trailing someone in another country? I've been here before. I recognise the house and the memories precede my actions. This man at the terrace, what was his name? 3/4 back, peppered hair in his late 50s. The blue wind jacket he owns for a quarter century. The state of mind of someone who cannot comprehend fashion anymore. His name escapes me. I can see the letters floating in midair in Baskerville, but the name doesn't clutter. I turn around and catch two lower cases while the other five's laughter trail off. F-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f-f- I cannot bear the shame of meeting him again without the information. I pride in resisting a smartphone search, although I wouldn't know where to look. Simultaneously, I forget what my favourite movie is. I leave without a word, cloaking myself for the next encounter. The cold deepens my wrinkles. People here age better and faster. Always something to do, make, amend, use, repeat. Always something to do, make, amend, use, repeat. Always something to stop. Do they know it can be warmer, drier elsewhere? My wheels get caught in a rail of previous motorised flaneurs with a purpose. Inevitably, I end up on a porch where the couple is welcoming me. The indent of my car as their wooden terrace was older, I swear. They remember me, and he is kind enough to greet me immediately, saying his name, Paul. Hers instantly echoes in my head, Helen. This time it's his face that blurs. Where are the glasses I never had? So good to see you both. Although, will this destroy our history that I, over the years, have told to so many in increasingly embellished manners? I love you, but shouldn't we sacrifice future encounters? She, so tough and cool, somehow soft and coy with me. It is true, then, that while I don't get starstruck, tiny fires can strike in pockets. Washing my hands for such length, I look at her thinking thoughts she won't share. A bead curtain between us, her hands soapy.